You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You may not recognize the name William Claude Dukenfield, but he's been making millions laugh for almost a century. And now the New York Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center is celebrating the man he became in an exhibit called The Peregrinations and Pettifoggery of W.C. Fields. It runs through August 21st, and not only is a lot of memorabilia on display, but also some of his classic films will be shown. With me now to discuss the life and work of this comic genius are Harriet Fields, his granddaughter, and vice president of W.C. Fields Productions, also film historian, silent film accompanist Ben Modell, who'll be appearing at today's 2:30 screenings of Pool Sharks and So's Your Old Man. Welcome to our show. Welcome
Thanks.
Back, Ben.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nice to be here.
Harriet, did you know your grandfather?
No, my grandfather died just before I was born, 3 weeks before I was born. But I do know him from just my essence of being, from my father, who looked exactly like his father, W.C. Fields Jr., except my father was taller, and from Hattie, Harriet, his wife and estranged wife, from my mother, and from all the artifacts and memorabilia that we grew up with, which is now on display here in New York at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts.
Well, I would not have recognized a family resemblance just looking at you. So I guess you don't have the bulbous nose. You don't.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We met W.C. Sister Adele and youngest brother Leroy. And they didn't drink, and they had bulbous noses. So growing up through the years, I was sort of monitoring my nose, but it hasn't appeared.
Now, when your father talked about him, did he describe him as a family man? Because he has this image of just hating kids.
Well, you know, W.C. Helped purport that myth also. As a matter of fact, W.C. Fields drove his first born grandchild home from the hospital, St. John's Hospital in Santa Monica, California, with Hattie, his wife, my mother, the new mother, and W.C. Fields III. And incidentally, the week before, Charlie Chaplin's daughter, Geraldine O'Neill, was born in the same hospital, the same floor. So you can just imagine how thrilling that was for the nurses.
Well, he must have been different with kids, but not with dogs. I'm sure he just didn't love them. He's been depicted as something of a misanthrope. Was he that way in real life?
No, you know, and that's one of the reasons I just love W.C. Fields so much, and he really is my spiritual inspiration, and I feel committed and passionate by really mere happy accident of birth to share our heritage with the world and to ensure that younger generations know him. If you go to the exhibit, and if you look at W.C. Fields in his eyes and any of his films, you'll see a sweetness of being and a gentleness of character. So no, he wasn't. And he studied us. He studied the human condition and gave it back to us in his art.
But he did have reasons to be unhappy. He'd had a terrible childhood, hadn't he, Ben?
Yeah, well, Harry could probably speak more to
that is part of the myth also. He grew up in Philadelphia. His father was an immigrant. He came over as a teenager with his father and his five brothers from England. And W.C. Occasionally would get in a row with his father and then go around and sleep and stay with the cousin or parents. And our brother Ronald J. Fields, who's really the Fields film, a world historian.
And wrote the book called W.C. Fields.
W.C. Fields, A Life on Film, which is really the essential filmography on W.C. Fields, and it's out of print. And if your listeners are interested or can contact us about reissuing it, it'd be a wonderful service. And you can get in touch with us by through our website, official W.C. Fields website, wcfields.com. But in terms of W.C. and family, in Ron's Emmy Award-winning special, W.C. Fields Straight Up, and Dudley Moore narrates Ron's words that W.C.'s mother, Kate Felton Dukenfield, walked him to the train station in North Philadelphia as a 16-year-old when he was coming up to New York to try his hand at the stage. And he narrates a phrase that's so touching, and that is, her boy would never be hers again. He would now belong to the world. So he came from a nice family, and a loving family, and he kept in touch with them all his life.
Although he did make a lot of negative jokes about Philadelphia, supposedly. It's apocryphal, those last words.
That
he was supposed, on his deathbed, he was supposed to have said, I'd
no,
rather
but
be
what
in
it was, there was a Vanity Fair magazine article, I think 1925, and they asked famous people, what would they like as their epitaph? And that's what he said. But it doesn't say that. It says W.C. Fields, 1846.
He's both an accomplished physical comic and also verbally astute. And he started, well, his film career began in silent films.
Yeah.
But I always think of him as a man who just, well, first of all, that incredible voice, but also as a man who just had the most witty one-liners.
Oh, absolutely. And he started in silent films because that's what motion picture, that's what there was.
Had no
in
choice.
1915, he made a couple of short films out in Long Island or out in Queens, but they were, you know, he was on stage at night and shooting pool sharks, and another was short called His Lordship's Dilemma during the daytime. But that's what there was. And I think that one of the reasons that Fields' silent films may not have been as successful as Paramount, where he eventually got a contract during the mid to late 20s, they weren't as successful. I think that we know Fields' persona from his sound films. And when we look at the silent films, we retroactively put that on top. But I think a roaring 20s audiences that loved Harold Lloyd and, you know, appreciated Buster Keaton, but Keaton's popularity was a distant third. Fields' own persona doesn't really come through in a silent film, not just because there's no sound, but there's an energy and speed that comes with silent film because it's shot at one speed but shown faster. And it's actually the one transition to talkies that actually worked best for somebody. He actually, once you see him and hear him, you really get his whole persona coming through.
But he did start doing physical things. He was a juggler.
He was a juggler.
Yes. And didn't he run away from home or leave home very young?
No, 16. But he did.
He might
have. Well, he came, as I mentioned, his mother took him to the train station. He came up here to New York. Incidentally, the film that's being shown today that Ben is playing as expert, Silent Accompaniment, is Soldier Old Man, which last year was added to the National Film Registry in the Library of Congress. And a year ago, October 2008, the Pordenone Silent Film Festival in Italy, which is the largest silent film festival in the world, showed all week all of our grandfather's silent films. And I spoke throughout the week to the 1,000 attendees from all over the world, and they just could not get enough of his silent films.
In Soldier Old Man, 1926, I guess, he plays a downtrodden husband, a part that he would specialize in playing throughout his career. Why would he choose that type of role and then alternate it with these guys who are frauds and con men and wise guys? Totally polar opposites.
Yeah, they're very, very different. These may have been outgrowths from his stage persona and sketches he had done in the Ziegfeld Follies. Like most screen comedians who had come from the stage, they took what they knew and transported it that way. I don't think it would probably have been in his interest to come up with a brand new character. He's certainly sporting the clip-on mustache that he used on stage in all the silent films, and after the golf specialists, he sort of abandons it.
Well, he does a golf routine in that film.
His
first film, he does a pool shark. Well, it's called Pool Sharks.
Pool Sharks, yeah. He does a pool routine, although unfortunately we don't really get to see his actual pool routine because it's done with animation. Between possibly Flo Ziegfeld's not wanting to give away the store and just the logistics of transporting the pool table from the theater in New York City out to the studio and back, it was just did not become a part of it. But the golf routine is in Soldier Old Man. And actually, in Soldier Old Man, the guy playing his caddy is a guy named William or Shorty Blanche, who was his valet in real life, and so you get to see exactly what that golf routine looked like on stage, and it's absolutely it brings the house down every time I've seen it and played for it.
My guests are Ben Modell, a film historian and silent film accompanist, and Dr. Harriet A. Fields, vice president of the WC Fields Productions Incorporated. We're talking about an exhibit at the New York Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center called The Peregrinations and Pettifoggery of W.C. Fields, which runs through August 21st. So he was on loan, in effect, in the early films from Flo Ziegfeld?
He was sort of moonlighting the way a lot of people, like in the early sound era, people would be in Broadway shows at night and they'd go out and shoot these little Vitaphone shorts. So you could do it during the day the same way that the Marx Brothers quickly made a short that has disappeared. people who were in New York would go out to studios.
It'll turn up in New Zealand any day now.
In New Zealand or
well, he
or,
did. He was know. When he toured throughout the world. He was the most popular performer in Australia and New Zealand. And the film we're seeing tonight, Soldier Old Man, W.C. performed on stage a year before as Poppy.
And then he made a movie called
Poppy. And then the talkie Poppy. So a lot of his routines that you see are repeated throughout his films.
And a lot
films.
Of the films and the shorts and the early sound shorts and some of the later features are actually remakes to some extent of the silent films. But he's always what's wonderful about the films is that he inadvertently wound up preserving his act by working these routines into his films.
And actually, we have one of his trick pool tables at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, California.
But that's not in the exhibit.
No, it's really too fragile to send, but it's very well cared for.
When you're playing behind a Fields film, is it different than playing behind a Chaplin or a Keaton?
To some extent, I think that there are moments, especially in Soldier Old Man, where there are these little moments of tenderness, which there are opportunities to sort of hold back and underscore that drama, in addition to the usual sort of scenes at home with the henpecked. Yeah, as the henpecked husband and the difficulties with his family and neighbors and that sort of thing. There's standard comedy routines. It's one of the fun things about at least this film. Another film, Running Wild, that does survive. A number of his silent films are just completely lost, and hopefully they'll turn up. Running Wild's a little bit out of character, sort of a straight-ahead comedy, but Soldier Old Man is, I would say, the funniest and probably one of the best made of the surviving silent films that he made.
Which was made into a talkie, you're telling me.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Where did his various character names come from, like Otis J. Cribble Koblis or Mahatma Kane Jeeves?
Well, you know, he got a lot of them, and it's listed, quoted in the exhibit at the Library for the Performing Arts from people he knew and families he knew in Philadelphia.
So he'd go through a phone book and...
Well, and people he had interaction with in his neighborhood. Yes, and he also would go through phone books, but also dictionaries, too.
And did he write most of the scripts? Sometimes he's credited, sometimes
he's
not.
Yes, he did. And actually, he was impossible to direct because he knew... I mean, that's why I admire... Another reason I admire him, he was a true artist. He knew what the audience, the public would respond to, and he was not going to compromise his art. So he would write just the way he thought the public would respond.
On the other hand, he does a wonderful turn as Mr. Micawber and David Copperfield.
I love that. I think he should have won an Academy Award for that.
There's a disagreement over what his best films are. I was speaking to somebody on my staff, and they said, it's got to be It's a Gift because it has that classic scene where he's trying to shave in the bathroom and the mirror keeps moving, and where he's trying to sleep and the ball keeps falling down a long series of stairs. Also, his attempts at optimism are heartrending. And then I said, yeah, I like that, but what about The Bank Dick? And what about Million Dollar Legs? And what about My Little Chickadee? And what about That Fatal Glass of Beer? And I probably could have come up with seven or eight more. It's amazing how he kept on coming up with these hilarious films and all very different.
Yes. Well, you know, I always think there's no instance in the human condition we can't find some solace in W.C.'s art, whether it's raising teenage children, marriage, different in-laws, illness. It's wonderful.
Unlike some of the silent film stars, his work or early comedy stars, his work does seem timeless. It's just as funny to a 10-year-old today as it is a 90-year-old.
Yeah, I think it's because it's not something that's on paper. You know, it's not jokes or slapstick bits, but it's because of his persona that really just comes through. And he's somebody who has this incredible screen presence where you look at somebody on film and you instantly like them and you'll go on wherever they are and you can tell what they're thinking. So in a scene like in It's a Gift with Mr. Muckle, you just feel for Fields, and there is not
Mr. Muckle, who is blind,
he's the house detective for the Grand Hotel.
Yes, exactly, you can't describe why it's funny. There's some comedians like that who you just know, you just click with their personality and go along, like a comedian like Ernie Kovacs. You can't describe why it's funny, but it's still instantly enjoyable.
Ben Model will be accompanying some of the great films at the Museum of Modern Art this whole month of June.
Yes, that's
in a
right.
series called An Auteuristic History of Film.
Yes, exactly.
And what are some of the films included?
Oh, it's a director-centered chronological romp, so to speak, of a silent film. There's going to be screenings every single day from tomorrow through the end of the month, from early actualities all the way through great stuff from Griffith and foreign directors, German directors, all the way through the twilight years of silent film.
And we have details on our show page at WNYC.org. Also details about this exhibit at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, the amazing peregrinations and pettifoggery of one William Claude Dukenfield, also known as Cuthbert J. Twilley, Professor Eustace McGargle, Egbert Sucey. I always like that name.
Accent grave over the E.
The accent grave over the E. Yeah. T. Frothingall Bellows, and many others, including the president of Klopstockia. Mm-hmm. My great thanks to the two of you for being with us today. I've been speaking to Dr. Harriet Fields and Ben Model about, of course, the great W.C. Fields.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.